Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. In this video, we're going to take a quick look at what can be expected in 2023 in the war in Ukraine. So, let's go. On the screen in front of you are some images of cannons from the 18th century. Our race, especially Europeans, have ended up in lots of wars. And the situation that we're in now, in 2023, is similar to what happened in the past in Europe. In the 18th century, I think it was on the cannons of a French king, he had inscribed in Latin on all the cannons, which you see there on the bottom left, and in Latin it read, Ultima Ratio Regum. And what it means is, the last argument of kings. In other words, when the kings are busy and they are arguing with each other, their final argument is heavy weaponry. And that is really where we are today in this war in Ukraine. That is really what these tanks and missiles and artillery come down to. It's back to that. It's the last argument of the kings. Putin has spoken, and Putin speaks with tanks and artillery and cruise missiles. And Biden speaks, and he speaks with tanks and artillery and drones and so forth. So regardless of the fact that Biden's a piece of shit, a waste of white skin, a absolutely disgusting, hideous piece of crap, the fact of the matter is that Biden has power, and Biden can give orders. This is why white people need to take control of their own politics, so that we don't have all these bags of shit making all kinds of weird, Jewy decisions in this world. But the fact of the matter is, it is what it is, and there's nothing we can really do except watch. For my purposes, I keep looking to see what is going to come of this, what does this mean, and is there any way that we can turn this around in the years to come so that it works for whites. And I'm also watching for the sake of us whites in Africa, in South Africa. I'm asking myself lots and lots of questions. So as I predicted last year, I said that the war will slow down. As it carries on further, it will slow down. It will bog down. The reason it bogs down is because of many other things that are happening. There are different sides, and they've got their buddies, and they're bringing in their pals, and it's getting to a point where it's bogging down. And I mentioned also that in the winter, the temperatures alone, the extreme cold of Ukraine and Russia, will also make it bog down. So now the issue is, what is going to happen in the spring? What is going to happen in March and April, especially April, when the weather warms up, etc.? In European wars, most European wars, by the way, actually start in June. But last year, Putin got going early on the 22nd of February. And you will have noticed, if you'd followed the maps, you will have noticed that Putin's moves were all big moves, and they were quick in the first few weeks of the war. If you saw my analysis video, my October analysis video, or my video where I chatted to Scott, but especially the October analysis video, you will have seen all the maps that I put out there. And the war then started slowing down, but what you saw were the Ukrainians, due to all the new ammunition and weaponry coming from the West, you saw the Ukrainians pushing the Russians back. Before doing this video, I even went and watched a video where Douglas McGregor was talking to somebody. Douglas McGregor makes a valid point when he says that the war in Ukraine is not the same as the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. Yes, because you're fighting in a first world war in Ukraine, whereas when you're fighting in Afghanistan and Iraq, you're fighting a lower IQ, more third world type of war. The kind of stuff that we fight in Africa. And even Iraq is more advanced than the kind of wars that we whites have fought in Africa. So we are like on the lowest rung. If we had to fight a war, it would be a true third world war, as in third world being backward. We would fight the most backward, easiest war that you can fight here in South Africa and Africa. Iraq is the next level up, but Ukraine is back to a first world style of warfare. You are dealing with high tech, high quality people, high quality weapons. It's a hectic war. And the Russians, rather Putin, the king is determined to get what he wants. And he wants his victory in Ukraine. No war is ever fought over right and wrong. That's not true. Wars are never fought over right and wrong. They are fought over power, period. Might is right. Whoever has the power makes the rules. That's why you've got Putin doing things, the Jew Zelensky doing things, and that bag of white shit, Biden, doing things. They all have power. And so the real issue is just the interplay of power between those three. So the real thing is, what can we expect in 2023? I've been looking at the maps now and then. There is tons of secrecy. There's huge amounts of secrecy. There's so much secrecy. Nobody is telling you how many battle casualties they've got. So everything that you have to figure out, you have to look at, and you have to see what you can deduce from what others are saying who do have access to the numbers. And one has to deduce various things from that. I had a supporter in Canada, a good supporter in Canada, who has raised the issue of nuclear war. He's raised a bunch of issues that come from Douglas McGregor and Scott Ritter. And so what I did was I wrote quite a detailed email to him, which I'm going to read to you. So here it goes. I'm writing you quite a detailed analysis based on what I've seen. I hope you will take note of it and see how what I'm writing pans out. I realize that McGregor sees things through our eyes. I've begun realizing that, but I disagree with his military assessments. I understand that Douglas McGregor sees things through the eyes of the white right. That's what I'm saying to this guy. But even so, I have differences with many things that he's saying. And I know that he talks about how many people have been killed and all that kind of thing. But in the grander scale of things, in terms of the way power works, those numbers don't really mean much. Like McGregor says, there are at least 150,000 Ukrainians that have been killed, and obviously twice or three times that number are injured in hospital, etc. But you got to understand, 150,000 killed, and let's say another 300,000 injured. We're looking at like 500,000 or 600,000. Fact of the matter is, Ukraine has got a population of over 40 million people. So when you've got a population of over 40 million people, there's a huge manpower pool that you can dive into. I looked it up a while back. The Russians have got a manpower pool of about 20 million. The Ukrainians have a manpower pool of about 7 million. So even if the Ukrainians only fought to the point where they've got, let's say, 1 million dead and 2 million injured, they have only cut into about half of their manpower pool, actually. So the notion that the Ukrainians are running out of men right now, that's not true. That cannot be true. It doesn't match the numbers. So yes, it's the nastiest war since World War II, but in reality, those countries have got huge industries. So let's continue. I wrote further, forget the nuclear war stuff. That's not happening. I've explained this in my videos quite a lot now, and I'm tired of responding to that point. I'll discuss the nuclear war stuff again towards the end of this video, so let me continue. The Russians are playing a threat game because they see that we are falling for it. However, I've concluded that the actual top military people in the USA are less and less worried by the Russian threats because the big Russian talk is not matching what they can do. That's why the Americans no longer give a shit about openly challenging the Russians. That's why they're sending the tanks, which is a clear act of war. They are doing it because the Russians can't do much in return. It's going to be a hectic year, but again, the West is not even really worried because the Abrams tanks will take as long as 8 months to get to the battlefield, and they are clearly confident that Ukraine will still be able to fight. The Russians, as I see it, at best, if they advance during their offensive, it will be slow. However, what I'm curious about are the hints that the Western tanks, especially the Leopard 2 and M1 Abrams, might be able to defeat the very heavy Russian artillery. It looks as if 100 tanks will head there. It will be very interesting to see if they can push the Russians back. I'm expecting the war to be a lot harder fighting, but with less movement. And like I say, no matter how much of a storm the Russians and the people supporting the Russians talk, the fact is the map is not changing at all. They are fighting endlessly for very tiny pieces of territory. The advances of the Russians are so pathetic that you don't even see any changes on the maps in weeks. By the way, Hitler did not think much of the Russians. As I have said from the beginning, the movements will get slower as the sides bog down. But I'm wondering if the tanks could be a game changer like the HIMARS was. My own assessment of the Western generals' views is that they no longer worry about what threats Putin or Russia makes, or even if they openly break the rules, because they have assessed the Russians, and the Russians can talk all they want, but they cannot back up their threats with anything. So there is nothing to fear. They're going to hurt the Russians. I think people will be quite disappointed when Putin's big offensive happens, because it's not going to make even a fraction of the advance that he did last year. If Putin can make 10% of the advance he made last year, he will be a very lucky guy. I don't expect anything big. The Ukrainian army, despite its weaknesses, is very experienced by now. They're not going to collapse. I also have not seen any proof that the Russian cruise missiles are totally collapsing the country. They seem to be doing damage, but I don't see or hear of any proof that the Ukraine's economy is collapsing. There are negatives, and I'm not sure if Ukraine can pull off any advances. If so, the most critical advance is to cut Crimea off from Russia. If that can be done, that will be a huge loss for Russia. We will have to see if the tanks can achieve that over the next 10 months or so. I'm getting the sense that the Western generals, especially the American generals, are very confident. The Russians can talk about nukes and hypersonic missiles, but it won't amount to a hill of beans. I've heard so much hype about hypersonic missiles from China and Russia. Putin actually used a hypersonic missile in the early months of the war. I just say phooey to that. Its military value is minor. I don't see any new Russian weapons, and I don't see any proof of any new allies joining the war, e.g. Belarus. It will be a hell of a slogging match this year, but I don't think you will see much movement. I think a very slow Russian advance at best, but the game changer in some respects might be the tanks. But I'm not sure if Ukraine can actually advance like it has done. It's best to try and slice Crimea off from Russia. If they can do that, then that will be huge. Huge. It's a slow, slogging year with plenty of fighting, and we won't see much movement. That resignation by that top Ukrainian advisor to the Jew Zelensky indicates that a raw, outright victory for Ukraine might not be possible. But that guy said that they've lost the best opportunity. But McGregor also claimed Ukraine was lucky in September. That's a rather pathetic analysis. Was it luck or was it skill? In war, you don't win by luck alone. That guy who resigned might be sick of Zelensky, and he seemed very clever to me. Let me pause there. I really thought that McGregor was pathetic when he said that the Ukrainians had a wonderful amount of luck in the month of September. War does not function on luck. You don't advance because you're lucky. You advance because you're beating the other side. And all the talk of the Russians being kind and all that's baby talk. The bottom line is if somebody advanced and somebody retreated, then you know clearly who was winning and who's taking a beating. It's that simple. Nobody advances or retreats in warfare because they're feeling happy or because they're feeling kind or because somebody's just gotten very, very lucky. These are bad analyses. It's junk. The only analysis that I see that is negative, that I take seriously, is the Ukrainian top guy who resigned. And he resigned, it seemed to me, because Zelensky, the Jew Zelensky, wanted him to lie about something. Wanted him to lie about some cruise missiles. And I suspect that maybe the guy is sick and tired of Zelensky, and so it shows that there might be people on the Ukrainian side who've dealt with Zelensky who are sick of him. So that's not good for the Ukrainians. But the Russians have had lots of generals that they've fired or that have been killed. So the Russians have also not had an easy time either. But that top Ukrainian military guy basically said that Ukraine had a chance to win the war and they've lost that chance now. And that the way that this thing will go is that eventually it will end up on the negotiating table. So that indicates to me that things are pretty stagnant, that both sides are going to hit with everything they have. Lots and lots of guys are going to get killed. Probably this year we'll see maybe twice as many men getting killed this year as last year. But it's not going to change the battlefield that much. Even though both sides are going to be climbing into each other like crazy, it's going to be a meat grinder. And men are just going to be getting killed, and the advances are going to be very slow. So we'll have to see more about that. But let me just carry on reading. The real key thing is to see what happens when those 100 Abrams plus Leopards plus Challengers go into the fight. Can those tanks allow the Ukrainians to push the Russians back? The weapon I'm interested in is the German Leopard 2. I want to see what they can do. Artillery is the only thing the Russians have that is holding their line. They do have hundreds of their own tanks which they can still use, but I don't see any sign that Ukraine is going to collapse. I think they can last a whole year without any problems. Consider Kherson, for example, the biggest city the Russians had. What is the chance that the Russians will recapture Kherson anytime soon? I don't see any indication that the Russians will be there in the next year. Look on the maps, this war is hardly moving. Even when the Ukrainians are losing, the distances are so tiny, you can't even see a change on the map. I've been watching maps for months now, and I'm telling you, I hardly see any movement. People are saying, oh, the Russians have captured Soledar, they're fighting in Bakhmut, they're advancing. And you go and you actually look at the map, those places are tiny, the distances are small, they're hardly moving. This is, again, not like the beginning of the war where the Russians were advancing hundreds of kilometers. It's nothing like that. So even if the Russians are advancing, they have to fight literally for every inch of the ground. So I continued, I wrote, the whole year is going to be lots of shooting, lots of deaths, and the lines will not move much, except if the Western tanks can cut off Crimea. The Ukrainian who resigned reckons there is no longer a chance of an outright victory. However, the American generals seem to me to be very confident. The Russians can make any threat and they don't care. The Russian bear has no teeth. So that's my assessment for the months ahead. Regards, Jan. So that is the big thing that hit me when I looked at what the American generals were saying. I walked away with the impression that the American generals are less and less worried about what the Russians can do. My assessment is that the intelligence services in America and Britain and the West have been watching all kinds of top secret stuff that's going on, and that they have watched the Russians, seen what the Russians can do. There are things that they were scared the Russians would do, but it is becoming very obvious that the Russians cannot follow up on many of their threats. So Russian threats are losing their value now. Another good thing that I came across regarding the Russians is that the Ukrainians are struggling to kill the Russian T-90 tanks. It seems as if they've got to outnumber the Russian T-90 tanks 3-1 before they can kill them. But even so, they're not exactly retreating, the Ukrainians. So regardless of how hard it is, the T-90 seems to be the best real Russian tank out there. If you look at the screen, on the bottom right is a Russian Armata tank. That is their latest and most advanced tank. But that tank has never seen battle. It is a new tank. They've been working on it for about 11 years. And it's still very much in a development stage. The Russians don't have that many of them. And if the Russians put them into the fighting, then it means they're putting an untested weapon into the war. That means it's going to have all kinds of teething problems. This is almost like what Hitler did with the Panthers in World War II, where he was putting tanks into battle that still had teething problems. The generals did not like it. They hated it, and it didn't really help. While the enemy now suddenly gets to know more about that weapon. So the Russians are clearly throwing everything they can at it, and they're trying to make every threat possible. To me, it seems like the artillery is the main weapon of the Russians, and the cruise missiles are the weapons that are doing the most damage beyond the battlefield. And that shows a sign of desperation. That's like the Americans and the British in World War II, busy bombing German cities and blowing up suburbs and killing civilians. Putin is killing civilians because he can't beat the Ukrainian army outright. And that's why the British and Americans were doing that in World War II. They were also killing the civilians, bombing the factories, because they couldn't just beat the German army by itself. You must keep in mind that the Western world, especially the Americans, do lots and lots of war gaming. They do lots and lots of very sophisticated war gaming. They bring in all kinds of people from the intelligence, from the CIA, from the military. They bring in all their stuff. And they do lots and lots of advanced war games. So when I look at what the West is thinking, to me, I think that they've war gamed all these things. And let's take, for example, the tanks. The British are sending a couple of Challenger tanks. I think the real weapon that the Americans want in the war, the real weapon that they want in the war, is the German Leopard 2. That's that tank in the top middle, that tank that's got that nice camouflage and you can see the Iron Cross on it. I think that the Americans want the Leopard 2 in battle against the Russian tanks because the Leopard 2 might be excellent against the Russians. But the Germans were very determined not to let these weapons go. The Germans have been doing their utmost to stay out of the conflict and they're not keen. Clearly, the Germans are not keen to help the Americans. And I don't blame the Germans because the Germans fought in these very same areas with everything that they had 80 years ago. I can understand why the Germans would have a chip on their shoulder. I myself feel that they have every right to have a chip on their shoulder. I would have a chip on my shoulder. Why help these bloody Americans when 80 years ago the Americans were busy giving all the weaponry to the Russians to kill the Germans? So the Germans cannot be happy about this. But I think what happened is that a top American guy went and had negotiations with the Germans, and there must have been a point at which the Germans must have made some kind of demands, whether it's money, whether it's some other request, and I think the Germans got their way. I think the Germans have allowed all these tanks to go because the Germans dug their heels in, and what we don't know is what money or whatever it is that the Americans have agreed to give the Germans. There's some quid pro quo that's happened here. So the Americans have gone to give the Germans all the things that they secretly want, and that's why the Leopards are going into battle. And it looks to me like among the demands of the Germans has to be that the Americans have to bring in Abrams tanks. If the best of the German tanks have to go in, then the Americans must bring in their best. Because also after this, it was said that the Americans are going to put in 31 Abrams tanks. And that's a kind of a funny number as well. But it's almost 33, which would be a third of the number of tanks that are going in. Because the talk is that there are going to be 100 tanks going in. I think that the Germans dug their heels in, and that's why you now hear there are 31 Abrams tanks going in. But I think it's more than just that. I think the Germans must have gotten other things out of the Americans. The way the Americans work is they negotiate everything. Everything is a deal, and some kind of deal has gone down. And part of it is send more Abrams. But I'm sure there are other benefits that the Germans have got out of this, because the Germans were not keen to do this. There are huge differences and problems between the German Leopard and the Abrams tank. The Abrams tank is something that is very, very heavy, and it's very weird. It's got a jet engine. It doesn't run on diesel engines like the other tanks. It's got lots and lots of problems, actually. It's not a very nice tank. But the Americans have fought with this thing for so long and used it for so long that it seems to me they've gone and upgraded all kinds of things in it. So it's a kind of ugly tank, but this tank has had all kinds of electronics and armor and all kinds of modifications done to it over the decades of the Americans using it for fighting. And it's a very heavy, very costly, exceptionally costly tank, and it's very difficult to maintain. It's really quite a horrible tank, but it's the best of what the Americans have got. Whereas the Leopard is a much more better designed, efficient German tank, and it looks to me like the Leopards can go into battle quicker and at less cost and be functioning much quicker than the Abrams. And so that is the big change. The real game changer they want are those Leopards in there to maybe take on the T-90s. I get the impression that in the wargaming that they have figured out some kind of tank battle tactics that might allow these tanks to break through those Russian lines with all those Russian troops and all that heavy, heavy artillery that is being aimed by drones. I get the impression that they think that this line that has stabilized can be broken again, but that it requires advanced tanks. And it seems the West has, or rather America has, committed to 100 tanks. So all in all, we'll see about 100 tanks going in there. But they are saying that it's going to take the Abrams anything from 6 to 8 months to be functional on the battlefield. Now, I cannot say if that is accurate or whether that is itself deception. Whether they're saying, okay, the Abrams is going to be functional in 8 months' time. Meanwhile, in reality, they've got a secret plan and the Abrams is going to be functional in 4 months' time. I don't know. Everybody is lying and everybody is hiding all kinds of things that can give the game away. But it does look like the German tanks will be functional by the end of March. Looks like these Leopards will be in battle by April, by the beginning of April. However, I get the firm feeling that the Americans are so confident, the American military is so confident that Ukraine is not going to collapse. That is why they are making all these long-range plans, because everyone on the Russian side is talking about this great offensive that Putin's going to go on, that Putin has got 700,000 troops, that 350,000 of them are going to go into battle. This basically means that Putin's got more than twice as many troops as last year, more than twice as many fighting troops as last year. But I think that his offensive, that the West has assessed his offensive and that they are quite confident that whatever advances he manages to make, it's not going to be that much. And that if they can get those Leopards in, it'll slow his offensive down. And then by the time the Abrams and the others are in, that maybe the Ukrainians will be able to go on a counter-offensive. And I think that you might see Putin going early and fighting, and you might not see that much of an advance. Like, I'm not even sure if we can expect Putin to even capture Kherson. And Kherson is a place that his troops are close to, and they were there just a couple of weeks ago. Will he be able to get his troops across the river and back into Kherson? I must tell you, it looks to me like there are some places where Putin has lost, and I see no indication that he's going to be back anytime soon. The place where they fight a lot, there in the northeast, is very flat. It's a lot like the Orange Free State here in South Africa. It's flat, flat, flat terrain, and that makes it easier. And truly, the fighting around Bakhmut and Soledar, it doesn't impress me at all. It doesn't show me that the Russians are just winning with ease. In fact, the Russians are fighting tremendously in order to advance small distances. This is a lot like World War I. The battlefield has become like World War I, and I think that's why these tanks from the West are the issue. They are hoping that it will change the battlefield to World War II, where tanks can start breaking through these lines. These are very advanced tanks, they're very excellent. I think that Leopard 2 is a very efficient tank, and it will be very interesting to see how the Leopard 2 performs. I remember the Panzer 2000, which was heavy artillery, that went in, and the complaints were that the Ukrainians were firing it so much that the barrels were wearing out. So we'll have to see the Leopard 2, but I get the impression that the Leopard 2 has really impressed a lot of people, and in the few wars where it's been, it's excellent. And it's even excellent against IEDs. People have been very surprised by the excellence of the Leopard 2. So it looks like the German Leopard 2 is going to rock. The Russian Armata is too few tanks, lots of teething problems. I don't expect much to come from it. Looks to me like the best tank of the Russians is the T-90. These decisions may relate back to Biden and to Biden and the 2024 election. I must tell you that I think the American elite and Biden are involved in this with the Jews, and that this may be to make Biden look good. They need to win in 2024, and so this is just a game that they're playing, and they're just tossing all kinds of stuff in here. I get the impression that the Western generals, especially the American generals, are chomping at the bit because they are excited by the chance to cause lots of harm to Russia. Russia's been their Cold War enemy for decades, and this may be their best chance to take on the Russians and hammer them and really hurt them. And that is why they are so confident. They've watched the Russians, they've had a good chance to assess them. Remember, they are spying on them all the time, they're monitoring all kinds of things. They must know lots of things that make them very confident. Nuclear war, I've explained before, don't even worry about nuclear war. In fact, the Americans have already stated how the nuclear fight will go. The Americans have said, the American military guys who met the Russians actually said to them that if they do anything nuclear, that the Americans will go into Russia and they will destroy a whole bunch of nuclear bases and nuclear installations. They have made it clear that they're not going to nuke the cities, they're not going to kill the civilians, but the Americans are very confident that they're going to be able to totally blow away all of Russia's nuclear power. That they'll be able to absolutely destroy Russia's nuclear capabilities totally. That it'll be quick and they'll destroy everything, and the Russians will be sitting there minus nuclear weapons with a whole bunch of their own damage there. Their civilians will still be alive, but they'll have no more nuclear forces. I must tell you, that is what I picked up from some of these discussions, the leaks that have come out, that the Americans are 100% confident they'll go in, they'll blow away all the Russian nuclear stuff, and you'll see Russia minus nuclear stuff, lots of damage, but the Russians will still be alive, their cities will be alive. And that will be the end of any further discussion about nuclear war. That's where this thing is going to end. The Americans have got tons of money that they've put into these things. I have no doubt that they can do what they say. So if they do that, that would bring to an end the whole discussion about nuclear stuff. Who's going to win a nuclear war? America will win it on Russian territory, period. Don't imagine the Americans can't do it. I've dug into these things a lot, and I'm telling you, the Americans can do it. They will put the Russians in their place. The whole world's jaws will drop. You won't believe the power that America has. America spends 15 times as much on weaponry as the Russians. The Americans have got serious technology. And we've seen what HIMARS and the artillery has done. So I think that these tanks might just move the battlefield yet again. The Americans have got endless supplies of money. They just print money. They just print as much as they need. For them, this is peanuts. They can do this. They pay everybody off. They pay the Germans off. They pay the Ukrainians off. They just print the money and they give everybody everything, and it's going to happen. So it could be that what we'll see is, in the beginning of the offensive, we might see Putin advancing somewhat for a while, and then he'll get bogged down and his forces will come to a grinding halt. And then as the year goes by, you'll start seeing some kind of offensives again, and you'll see the Russians being pushed back. But the big question will be whether, with all this weaponry, whether they can actually cut Crimea off. If they cut Crimea off, that will be a huge defeat for Putin. That'll be a huge defeat. But I reckon even if they do get there, it's going to be one hell of a slogging match. Here is a short video where they compare and analyze the M1 Abrams tanks versus the Leopard 2 tank, and you'll see what they conclude at the end.
There are many different vehicles available in the world of ground troops, but historically, there are two nations that have a reputation for supporting tanks. German and American tanks have always had some competition, going back to the First World War and into the Second World War. But given that things are drastically different in the present era, we decided to compare the legendary Leopard 2 from Germany to the legendary M1 Abrams from the United States. What does each have that the other does not? And perhaps ask, which one is superior? Which one is worse? Make sure to stay tuned until the end. Hello folks, and welcome back to another military video. Today we're looking at the German Leopard 2 and the American M1 Abrams and comparing them to see which one is better than the other. Before we begin, make sure to hit that subscribe button to make sure you never miss any videos from us. Let's get started. German Leopard 2. The Leopard 2 is a third-generation main battle tank that Krauss Maffei first created for the West German Army in the 1970s. The Leopard 1 main combat tank of the West German Army was replaced when the tank first entered service in 1979. It's propelled by a V-12 twin-turbo diesel engine and equipped with a 120mm smoothbore cannon. A number of non-European countries, including Canada, Chile, Indonesia, and Singapore, as well as Germany and 13 other European countries' armed services, have used various variants. The Leopard 2 saw service in Syria with the Turkish armed forces and in Kosovo with the German Army. It also saw duty in Afghanistan with the Dutch, Danish, and Canadian deployments to the International Security Assistance Force. The tank comes in two main development batches. The initial models up to the Leopard 2A4 feature vertically facing turret armor, and the improved batch, which includes the Leopard 2A5 and newer versions, has angled arrow-shaped turret applique armor as well as other enhancements. All variants come equipped with superior night vision and sighting technology, fully stabilized main guns, coaxial machine guns, digital fire control systems with laser range finders, and other features. First vehicles used a low light level TV system, or LLL TV. Thermal imaging was introduced later on. The tank can engage moving targets while traversing unforgiving terrain. M1 Abrams. In honor of General Crichton Abrams, the M1 Abrams is a third-generation American main battle tank created by Chrysler Defense, now General Dynamics Land Systems. With a weight of almost 68 short tons, or almost 62 metric tons, it's one of the heaviest tanks currently in use, and was designed for modern armored ground warfare. It also featured a number of novel features, such as a multi-fuel turbine engine, intricate Chobham composite armor, a computerized fire control system, distinct ammunition storage in a blowout compartment, and NBC protection for crew safety. Early versions of the M1 were equipped with a licensed 105mm Royal Ordnance L7 cannon, while later models were outfitted with a licensed 120mm Rheinmetall L44 gun. The failure of the MBT-70 project to replace the outdated M60 tank led to the development of the M1 Abrams. The M1, M1A1, and M1A2 are the three primary operational Abrams models. With each subsequent iteration, armament, protection, and electronics have improved. The most recent versions of the M1A2 System Enhancement Package, also known as the SEPV-3 and SEPV-4, have undergone significant modifications, including greater composite armor, better optics, digital electronics, and ammunition. The Future Combat Systems XM-1202 was supposed to replace the Abrams, but because of its cancellation, the U.S. military has decided to keep running and maintaining the M1 series while updating it with better optics, armor, and firepower for the foreseeable future. The M1 Abrams, which first saw service in 1980, is now the principal combat tank for both the American Army and the Marine Corps. The militaries of Egypt, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, Australia, and Iraq employ the export version. The Abrams tank saw combat for the first time in the Persian Gulf War and has since participated in the Afghanistan and Iraq wars while serving in the U.S. military. Iraqi Abrams tanks have also participated in the fight against the Islamic State and have been used by Saudi Arabia in the Yemeni Civil War. Comparison: the modern world's Iron Titans clash. We contrast two of the most potent tanks in the modern era as this video comes to a close. The primary battle tank used by the German military today is a Leopard 2 from contemporary Germany. The main combat tank in use in the United States today is the M1 Abrams. However, its variations are more prevalent than the original. Both tanks have variants, but we'll be focusing on the originals, the models that were in use before they were improved and diversified. There is a Leopard 1 available now, but it's not an improved version of the 1. In 1979, the 2 began production and eventually entered service as a standalone vehicle. In Kosovo and Afghanistan, where it was used, the Leopard 2 proved to be particularly resilient against improvised explosive devices, or IEDs. NATO commanders lauded the Leopard 2 and its combat efficiency as a result. As a result, the military forces of Germany, Austria, Denmark, Canada, the Netherlands, Norway, Switzerland, Sweden, and Spain currently use the Leopard 2. According to Cowper and Panel, the German military intends to maintain the tank in service until 2030 due to its efficient design, making the Leopard one of the longest-serving tank designs in history. Now let's examine what makes the Leopard 2 so outstanding. The Leopard 2 weighs 60.4 tons, which is about normal for a modern tank. The Leopard 2 features a contemporary engine that was designed to manage that weight, allowing it to travel at a top speed of 42 miles per hour despite appearing to be hefty. That is indeed quick for a tank. The front armor of the Leopard 2 is 800 millimeters thick, and some Leopard 2 models feature armor that is 1,500 millimeters thick. Now, I'm aware that these tanks have larger cannons than the tanks used in World War II. Speaking of larger weapons, the Rheinmetall 120mm L44 smoothbore main gun mounted on the Leopard 2 gives this cat plenty of oomph. But it's time to deploy the American tank. The M1 Abrams and its variations are currently considered the best tanks in the world. Since the 1960s, the M1 has been in production as a replacement for the M60 Patton tank, which was in use at the time. The M1 included all these new design elements as new technologies for tanks were developed. According to Cowper and Panel, the M1 destroyed nearly 2,000 Iraqi tanks when it eventually saw combat in 1991, all without losing a single Abrams to hostile fire. The tank design is expected to remain for a while because the M1 has undergone numerous variations, much like the Leopard 2. A replacement design is decades away. With a weight of 62.6 tons, the M1 Abrams is slightly heavier than the Leopard. The tank's top speed, even with a contemporary engine, is only 30 miles per hour. Although the Abrams armor is thinner than the Leopard's, it's still 700 millimeters thick and made of a composite material that includes Kevlar, lead, and occasionally ceramic. All three of them can increase the tank's weight while also providing it with additional protection over its already thin armor by contemporary standards. However, the gun is everything but light or compact. The M256 120mm cannon, a particularly potent weapon that fires a special projectile, is used by the Abrams. The Abrams can rip through practically any type of armor thanks to the depleted uranium sabot cartridge, sometimes known as the silver bullet, which is the round that is most frequently utilized for this gun. In a true battle, these two tanks would be formidable foes, but as they both belong to allies, we can just compare them. NATO applauds the Leopard 2, which is in service with numerous nations and will continue to be produced due to its effectiveness. The U.S. military intends to continue utilizing the M1 Abrams, which is regarded as one of the greatest tanks in the world, into the foreseeable future. As the Leopard 2 outperforms the Abrams in the fundamentals of armor, weight, and speed, we declare the German Leopard 2 as the winner.
Regardless of how this whole war in Ukraine turns out, the bottom line is that I think 10 years from now, you're going to see a much more armed Europe. All of Europe will be much more militarized than ever before. I think the Americans are very tired of having to deal with many other things, especially Europe, and I think that their focus is really Asia. I think on the whole, having more weapons, more men who know how to use the weapons, etc., it's going to be good. We're going to need it for the coming race wars.
And so for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know, you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites. We gave you Breaking Bad and all the songs by Creed, all the cast of Friends and trash like Tara Reid, a virtual world of porn so you can spill your seed. Ray-Ban glasses, leggy blondes with tiny asses, frisbee sports and fancy coffee too, energy efficient lights. And so for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites.
Thank the whites, you know you don't.